What you're about to hear is the ultimate blend of technology and entertainment. This is ConfT with your SE.
That's right. This is ConfT with your SE. I am your host, Brian Young. Welcome to episode 65. Today we have a very special guest, Jordan Michalka. I didn't mess that up, right? I got it right this time.
Oh yeah, that's correct.
Jordan, why don't you introduce yourself?
So my name's Jordan. So I've been here as working in the Sox now, man, it's been since I'd say October-ish of 2001, it's got to be. So I originally came on to Driven as a NOC engineer, spent about 6 months or so over there, had the opportunity to transfer over into the SOC. Spent, you know, the last couple of years just doing SOC analyst work and got the opportunity now to step up into the SOC manager role. So I've been winging it there the best I can.
Nice. And that's great that we have you on because coincidentally, we're going to be talking about a day in the life of a SOC analyst. So this is what a coincidence this is.
Right.
First of all, congratulations on the bump up to the management position there. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I think when we had first met, you were just an analyst. And funny story for those listening. Jordan actually pinged me to reach out because my computer activity was flagging on his system, and it was actually doing this exactly what we're doing right now, doing the recording for the podcast. They hadn't really seen that kind of traffic before, and there it was alerting as possible DLP. So I thank him for reaching out and not just hitting the red abort button and cutting me off there. But it is funny how it all kind of came around full circle. So now you're on the show instead of trying to figure out
trying to stop it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I didn't want to put it that way.
Right.
You did, so it's okay. So let's start at the very, very basic, right? Mm-hmm. What is a SOC? Why is it necessary? What role does it play in kind of the cybersecurity realm?
Right. So the SOC is your security operations center, and in there you're going to have, now specifically speaking with cybersecurity, it's going to be your IT security professionals that are specifically focusing on the mitigating threats, trying to track them down, trying to analyze all the data that comes in. We're the ones that really, like, any type of data that is being sent to or from a network, it's basically on us to analyze that data and figure out, is it good or is it bad? And, you know, if it's bad, that's when we really start dipping into, all right, now we need to track down where it's coming from, what's the behavior, what's the any type of codes or commands that are being ran, any type of applications it's running or calling out to, any IPs, if there's a C2C server. But that's when it really gets into kind of the nitty gritty of hunting stuff down.
Right. What does a typical SOC team look like in terms of, you know, roles and kind of hierarchy and stuff like that?
So here, I know, like, ours, we start with tier one, tier two, and tier three, and then we have myself as the manager. Because we are kind of a smaller shop and still kind of trying to find our own footing around. I know one of the big things we'll look at, so, like, we have ours broken up between the SOC and the actual seconds team, but I think from what I've seen with most SOCs is kind of they would have them in there as well. So outside of just the analyst, you also now have your security engineers, an automations engineer that'll work on any type of playbooks you have through your SOAR platform. I'm trying to think. We'll get into – I'll work with a lot of – even some of the networking engineers, but that's more so if we kind of get into that route. So they're not really, you know, part of the SOC. The SOC itself, like I said, it's more kind of the analyst, and then you're like your security engineers are going to be the main ones really helping us out. And then a lot of the time you'll have the CISO in there as well.
Okay. And with everything changing with hybrid work after COVID and during COVID, how did the SOC landscape change with that? I mean, when I hear of a SOC or a NOC, I'm thinking of, you know, this big room with giant displays and all these graphs and red lights and green lights everywhere. Like, right. And, you know, here we are, we're talking to you. I don't see any of that in your background there. Yeah. So how has that evolved? How has that changed?
So working from a remote SOC is presenting some more challenges for SecOps teams. The biggest increase is going to be the cybersecurity threats since the pandemic began. You know, working from home does. The biggest thing I've noticed with us, the biggest challenge is more so the communication and the collaboration amongst the team. And it's not just us. It's also when it comes down to trying to communicate with clients, when it communicates with other internal departments, if we have to reach out to internal resources. I feel like being in an office, you know, I could just kind of hop out and holler down the hallway if I needed to get someone's attention. As to where now, yeah, that's really the biggest thing, is just trying to find that communication make sure everyone's collaborating and working together. But that's one of the biggest things, you know, when it comes down to a skill set I look for in my analyst, it's communication. Communication is key. I can work with someone that has very little to no background in cybersecurity, as long as they can communicate, because as long as they're listening and as long as they're asking the right questions, then I know that they have an analytical mindset that can get them to where I need them to be. But yeah, definitely nice. Communication is one of the hardest things we've had since working remote. And then also just the security that comes with us being remote. It's a little harder as far now, you know, we have to have all of our VPNs connected and other tools implemented to ensure that we're hardened and secured properly.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I would talking about going back to the communication piece. I mean, yeah, I think as for as many tools as we have at our fingertips to be able to reach out and, you know, send a quick message, right? You can text them, you can send them up a message on Teams, on WebEx, on email, whatever. It seems that sometimes it's even harder to get a hold of people than just, you know, popping your head around the corner, taking a quick stroll over to their cubicle or whatever. It's definitely, you know, it's definitely different. And I can imagine in your environment where time is of the essence, that can present some problems.
Yeah, it definitely heightens my anxiety at times, even if it's not necessarily the biggest, you know, impact on a client. If the activity does turn out to be suspicious or possibly malicious, it, you know, our biggest thing is wanting to hop on the alert or hop onto the activity as soon as possible, because the sooner that we can get on it, the sooner we can hopefully stop it. So yeah, it heightens my anxiety when I have to try to reach out to one of my analysts to ask for, you know, hands-on for something. And here I am having to kind of wait for them to get back to me instead of just being able to reach out to them directly and, hey, you're going to do this now instead.
Right. Yeah. I've run into that too in my role, where you kind of just run into the situation where you have a question and it needs to be answered, but it's holding up other things, and you send off that email. And then you move on to the next task. You know, you can't just sit there and wait for it. Right. But at the same time, you move on to those other tasks, and that whole thing gets dropped because maybe they didn't see the email, you didn't follow up, maybe you got it back and it got buried in something else. That can be a big challenge, and something that, you know, being able to just go over and walk up to someone and tap them on the shoulder and ask the question or whatever, give them the task, it's different. So. Very, very interesting. What does a typical day look like for a SOC analyst? Is it more reactive? Is there some proactive bits, some hunting? What's going on?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of both. Right now, a lot of what we've seen with my experience is it's been a lot of reactionary efforts, you know, monitoring the client network and really waiting for those alerts to come in. We're now in a point where I'm trying to push my guys really to get more into the proactive side, where now, you know, I got my tier three, I'm dedicating him to be the threat management team to lead that effort. So now him and his team will be the proactive aspect of that, where they're the ones going out looking for threats, looking for vulnerabilities, and actually trying to find, you know, where are these threats coming from? How are they working? How are they operating? And then what can we do not only to stop it, but also possibly be able to track them down enough to where if we need to and we report on it and send it up, you know, the authorities can hopefully actually find the individuals and take it from there.
And when you say authorities, you mean actual authorities, or what do you, who are you reporting it up to?
Yeah. So, I mean, for us, you know, a lot of what we're reporting to is going to be the client. You know, right. From us, I send it to the client, let them kind of, hey, this is what we're saying. And now they tell me, you know, is this expected behavior? Say I get like a brute force alert, which honestly, a lot of the times from what I've seen, it's just as simple as a user recently changed their password, may have forgot their password coming back from a long weekend, from holiday, whatever, pretty basic stuff. But, you know, when we go to contact the customer on it, I'm going to ask them, is this expected? Was it a password change? Is it something normal? Or, you know, is this something that y'all aren't aware of? And at that point, if the client then responds, regardless of what the incident is, that they don't recognize the activity as being expected or legitimate, that's when it's, for us, it's kind of, okay, hey, all hands on deck. Like, we need to track this down and really figure it out at this point. If it does get to a point, which we haven't had, luckily, but if it did ever get to a point, you know, say we got a ransomware attack coming into one of our client environments and we didn't catch it beforehand, it's too late. You know, we would work with the client, but I would be willing as kind of the SOC manager working for them. Yes, I wouldn't. I mean, if we needed to, because I assume they're going to do it. But, you know, I would write up a report as far as to hand over to the police or whatever entity they reached out to. But I would be able to provide them with a write up as far as this is what was seen. This is the behavior and kind of our suspicions, if we're able to find like some type of origin, and just kind of go from there.
Nice. Yeah. So it sounds like you kind of go through the entire cycle, everything from the initial alert all the way to, you know, if it needs to be, you know, report up to the proper authorities for any type of slap on the wrists or whatever is going to happen there.
No, yeah.
I think it's tough to, with 100% confidence, always say this is the entity, this is the attacker.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's certain, you know, telltale signs that can be like, oh yes, we believe it came from this because of X, Y, and Z. But it can be very, very difficult to just with 100% certainty pinpoint that. And then of course, from the legal aspect and how slow that process moves, with the burden of proof and everything else,
right.
You know, whatever happens to it, who knows, but at the very end of the day, at least you've been able to detect it, remediate it, maybe close up that vulnerability that was used, and save the day for your client, the customer.
Yeah.
So in talking, it sounds like, and even just in the interaction we had initially with the podcast recording, you know, it sounds like you get a lot of alerts in a typical day. How do you prioritize all those alerts and kind of weed out the important actual alerts versus maybe the false positives?
Right. So a lot of it, it's kind of based on that experience of the analyst is being able, you know, when I first came on and when I first started, I didn't understand the client environment. So I was quick to reporting on almost everything I saw because I just didn't know. But once I had enough time here and I had seen kind of that norm behavior from the clients, you kind of start to build your own, I guess, rules to triage. So you can, you know, do that yourself, but we also have, our SIEM that, sends our alerts into our SOAR platform and then also our XDR platform, you know, sends alerts into XSOAR. And both XDR and our SIEM, which is Logrhythm, they have their own built-in rating tools. So as the either the logs from LogRhythm or the activity as a whole is ingested into XDR, they have their own built-in rules that then take the data that they're seeing based on activity that's seen in the wild, based on those threats or the behavior of certain vulnerabilities or attacks. They can then kind of build out based on what they're seeing, and they each have their own kind of set of rules as far as what ranking it would fall into, whether it's low, medium, high, or critical. Or some of them give it like a score, say 0 to 100 on how big of a threat it may be. A lot of it is, so of course, like I said, our own kind of, I guess, intuition on the triage, being able to look at them and just kind of know what's more critical versus, like a malware to me, I'm going to look at it, run the hash real quick. And I could have two of them, right? And the one that, of course, say the hash comes back, even if it's just a little more suspicious, it doesn't have to be full blown, 100%. This is known malicious. But if it has a higher rating at all, I'm going to spend more time really looking into that one versus looking into one that I just did a quick search and it comes back like my threat intel says it's good. All right, well, I'm not too worried about this because it's most likely a false positive. So it's really a lot of using the tools you have, knowing to use. I mean, there's open sources out there that you can use as well. I would just say if you go that route, use multiple rather than just relying on one kind of open source tool because it is open source. So, it's not necessarily the most accurate data.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of these tools already, but I'm just curious if there's any others that you would really classify as essential for the SOC analyst's toolkit.
Oh yeah. So for the main tools we have are going to be some type of log collection and management tool. Which that one could be an XDR or a LogRhythm, or like your SIEM, which your SIEM is going to be your security information and event management tool. Those ones I've seen with a lot of the SIEMs, it seems to be more logs they're kind of looking at, as to where when we start looking at the endpoint detection and response tools, our EDRs, like XDR, those take in a broader picture. It's not just solely reading logs and spitting out those logs. It's actually taking not just the logs, but it's now looking into the behavior itself. You have an analytical engine on the backside that is analyzing the behavior nonstop. And, kind of going on, one of the technologies I guess we have is that user and entity behavior analytics. Palo has their analytics engine, which I love, and it really helps us because it'll analyze that data, say for a large upload, like with yours. That was one where, because it was the first time more so that we were seeing it, that it's like, hey, this is new behavior, therefore we need to alert on it.
Right,
But
this is odd.
yeah, but since then, we haven't had those alerts come in because it's picked up on, hey, this is normal behavior for the user and endpoint.
And we'll just kind of pick on that a little bit. Even when you got the alert, you kind of went through and did some checks. And I remember looking at the incident myself with my read-only access, just to kind of see, hey, what was picked up? What were you seeing, right, in terms of the alert? What information were you presented with? And it was funny because you had messaged me, and of course I turn off all messaging when I'm doing this, so I didn't see it until after. But you would kind of put in some of the information. You're like, I think this has something to do with your podcasting because it's going into AWS, but it's linked to this Riverside thing. And doing my research, it looks like, podcasting recording platform. So I'm gonna hold off on it unless you tell me otherwise. But, versus just hitting that red button and aborting my connection, which would have been understandable. But yeah, so So you're saying even now, and I know we did some, you might have done some whitelisting too, but the behavior itself, it's gotten used to the wacky things that I do. And I'm sure there's been others. I've come up on your radar a few times because I do things that no one else does. But since then, it's kind of gotten used to me and been like, okay, this is my outlier here.
Yeah.
He does some weird shit. Just let him be. And then, of course, there's the human factor to it as well.
Oh, right?
Yeah. You and I have talked, and you know that I do some crazy stuff. And if you see Nmap running on my computer and scanning my local network, that it's okay.
Oh,
I'm not infected or something. I'm probably just poking around and testing something internally myself. So that's cool. Yeah. So you have those kind of tools. What about? I might be putting you on the spot here, but what about for like someone that's really trying to just kind of homebrew it themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any, you know, I know we mentioned some open source stuff, but like, could you in theory build a, you know, kind of a home lab kind of or lab type environment SOC with open source tools and kind of get a majority of the things that you need, or are there bits and pieces that are absolutely essential that just require some type of proprietary software?
So I'm not 100%.
That's fair.
I'll kind of start with that, but I wouldn't be surprised, just knowing how people are, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a full open source like tools that you could find for kind of a small startup SOC like that. They probably wouldn't be the most reliable, but I mean, honestly, it wouldn't surprise me. I feel like that's kind of been the new push for a lot of stuff, is as soon as something does come out proprietary, you got, you know, groups of individuals that are already trying to break it and make it to where everyone can now understand what makes it work and how it works the way it does.
Yeah, they love poking at the code.
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness. Now you mentioned communication being like probably, from what it sounds like, the top most required skill to be able to be a SOC analyst. What other key skills would you look for in a candidate, especially now that you're in a manager position?
So, you know, one of the biggest skills actually but is patience. That is going to be probably right up there with communication, because, okay, and it's not so much patience of, I'm trying to think of how to put, I guess it's more just like with yourself, of really knowing that like this stuff's nonstop. You know, I'm in the process of training a new analyst. She just started last week, and I told her, I go, listen, there's still stuff that years in I've never seen before. There's still stuff. We have analysts that have been here with the company since day one, and there's still new stuff that she sees. So don't ever think that you're going to have this thing just nailed down pat, you know?
Right.
I guess that's the, it's for me, it feels like I never know enough, just because it is ever evolving and ever changing. So having the patience and just understanding, you know, it's a long haul type of thing. It's not really a job for immediate satisfaction. That's kind of putting that work in for the long haul. But a big skill too is some type of programming. Now, if you have some type of programming background, or even just that understanding, that'll be a huge factor to really kind of help set you aside, because we use a lot of SQL queries when we start getting into either custom queries or trying to write custom alerts for clients. So already having that basic understanding is a huge upsell for me. I feel like a basic understanding of just networking in general, because then you can understand, you know, if you see activity coming from a host to a certain server, then going from there to either another internal host or going to an external host, you kind of understand what that server is. You know, if we see like alerts for the, just them uploading stuff to a file server. So then we know, okay, hey, at least we know the use of this server. So any other alerts that are seen around that server at that server's IP, we know, okay, hey, it's this specific use.
Right. Right. When you see SIP traffic coming out of a file server, that's going to be very strange. It's not going to be a normal behavior. It's something that should be looked into.
So then, of course, you know, I already hit on being able to effectively communicate and collaborate. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a big one. I guess kind of having a passion or even an understanding, any type of ethical hacking, that would be a good thing. You know, there's a lot of, instead of being on the red side, we are more of a blue team, meaning that we are strictly defensive. We're not really going out there on the offensive, like coming after you or trying to find those holes or trying to hack into your network. We're trying to solely defend it. But just having that understanding of, like, if you already have that understanding of ethical hacking, that'll help now on the defensive, because you can add to what they are specifically trying to do, or maybe the way that they may try to alter it to avoid our detection. So that'd be extremely helpful. Then I got into the incident handling and just being able to document your findings. So once you get into it and you're actually, you know, if I can basically get you out of training and now you can run a shift on your own, you know, of course, hit me up for questions, but you're confident enough, you can kind of take it from there. I need to know, too, that you actually know what you're doing looking through these alerts. So I put it as you're basically looking at data, regardless of what that data is, it's just data. But the biggest thing is being able to analyze that data and not only tell what's happening, but being able to effectively communicate that to the client. Being able to record it, whether it's just sending a little write-up and an email to the client, this is what we've seen. That way they can understand too. And if they need to take it to another level, then they have that write-up ready to go. So yeah. And then, like I said, but the biggest thing is just the communication, and really just having that analytical mindset. Without having an analytical mindset, honestly, you're just not going to make it as an analyst, because that's our whole job, is to just analyze everything. Title. Yeah.
It's in the title. Now that makes sense. I want to touch on the red teaming, blue teaming. Now we did an episode previously, episode 64, talking with Secure Network Technologies. They are vendor that we've partnered up with to do pen testing, and they specifically do not do any of the remediation. It's only pen testing, specifically, you know, red teaming. And we went into details into, you know, what kind of services they offer, internal, external, physical pen test, all that. And kind of highlighted some of the remediation pieces that we at Driven do. Is that part of your team, or is your team kind of the after everything's kind of fixed up, let's just keep an eye on it and make sure that it stays that way?
Yeah, so we do come into the remediation aspect. I've actually have a couple pen test reports from some of our clients. Nice. And that's what we do, is like, they will usually go to a third party. You know, sometimes they'll have them do the remediation process with them. But of course that's extra money they got to give them. But if they don't, that's where we can step in, and they'll send the report to us, and myself, the threat management lead, and then our security engineering team will look through the report and find the noted vulnerabilities. And that's where we come in. Okay, what can we do to fix these? What steps do we need to take to patch these holes? So that way, you know, next time, or God forbid that there is an actual malicious actor out there, we've already kind of plugged those holes to where they now can't take advantage of it.
Right. Right. Cool. Yeah, it's funny how we've really come full circle between the last episode and this one in terms of the red teaming and blue teaming. That's really cool. So now how do you, specifically, but also your team, how do you guys stay up to date with the latest threats and trends going out there?
All right. So the biggest thing, you know, I guess one of the articles we check daily, it's kind of one of my favorite ones, throwing props out to the Hacker News. They are a big one that will look for a lot of I guess, stuff that's seen out in the wild. So we'll go with them. Then on top of that, I mean, it's honestly staying on top of webinars that are out there from our providers. So anything that Palo, which would be Cortex or LogRhythm, is sending us, you know, jump on those just to learn as much as we can. If there's any type of online courses, I've even told my guys to jump into that stuff when it comes to the new tools. You know, if there's, say if you are a company that's looking at getting into a new platform with, say, Splunk, then why not take advantage of like Udemy classes ahead of time rather than waiting for, okay, hey, it's implemented and now it's kind of like you have to run to learn, rather than really being able to kind of just walk and learn, like take your time with it and understand it before it's actually implemented.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to be in that situation where you kind of have to learn on the fly, because things can get missed for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I know we talked about a few of the challenges. Specifically, we kind of talked about the problems that you're having in terms of communication and keeping in contact with your analysts and being able to kind of quickly get in touch with them. But what are some of the other challenges that that SOC analysts are challenged with today?
So really, kind of on a personal level, I guess the biggest challenge I've had is that whole work-life balance. As I said, this job, there's a lot that goes into it. And you kind of have to have that passion for it. So, you know, when we have something going on in a client environment, just because, say, my shift's over, someone else's shifts are over, we can't necessarily just hop off. You know, it's kind of ride it out until the end, regardless of how long it takes, what time it is. You know, we need to get it fixed, whether it's for ourselves or for the client. A big thing kind of, I guess, generally that I experienced when I was more so in the analyst seat is going to be alert fatigue. And that's where it really falls on the analyst to tune the alerts, you know, gather that information from the clients, ask them questions. If you're starting to get constant or like a repetitive alert, then ask them about it. Ask them about like specifically around the user and host, and if this is normal behavior, if it's going to be continue to be expected. And if so, hey, like go ahead and portray to the clients, in order to mitigate alert fatigue, we would like to implement some type of alert exclusion or better tune the alert to lessen how often it comes in.
Right.
But that's really comes down on the analysts themselves being able to reach out to the client like that and just have that conversation with them. Another challenge really is going to be keeping up with the constant evolving threats and landscapes. Kind of, as I said before, you know, it doesn't stop. I feel like kind of in my networking background, it was kind of easier. It was a lot more slow paced. It's just, I didn't feel like it was ever evolving, because I didn't always have someone trying to hack into my, you know, my network and to tear it down. As to on the security side, I mean, it's nonstop. You know, someone's always out there trying to find a new way to either get into your network or to completely tear it down.
I was going to say to F up your day.
Yes. Yes. That's how it is. So I swear. And that's how I put it to our old SOC manager. He's one of my buddies. Is I was like, I feel like on the security side, like someone's always trying to F my day up.
Yep.
Then it really is. You know, outside of there, it kind of comes into, if, you know, some people may have budget restraints just because a lot of the tools can get pricey. So depending on the size of the organization, that's definitely something to come into play onto what tools and resources you have available to yourself and to your team, getting the training as well for those resources. And then trying to implement the advanced analytics tools, just trying to find, you know, what is out there that can just help you and make your job easier. And that's really the thing I'm trying to work on now with our team. You know, been here a couple of years, been through it as an analyst. I've had to kind of suck it up and, you know, drag myself through the mud to figure out man, this sucks. Like, what can I do to make it easier just on me as an analyst? So now in the manager spot, I'm trying to use that same mindset with my guys is what can I do? What did I experience that I can now change to make their life easier? And a lot of that is looking at automations or other tools that are out there. And it's, you know, guys, we have this stuff available. It's already built in as far as automations. Why not take the time to really pick apart one of these alerts so we can automate it and take time away from an analyst? Now it's being sent out. Now we have that free time to look more onto the proactive side of what right. threats are out there. What can we do to find certain indicators of compromise so we can put rules in place to look for those indicators? Or if we see something that's a vulnerability for a certain application and we see that application in a client environment, then we can go ahead, notify the client and say, hey, just a heads up, if y'all aren't already aware, this vulnerability is out there. This is the recommended steps for remediation. And then just kind of leave it, you know, hey, if you need help with that, feel free to reach out. We'd be glad to assist. Or a lot of them just kind of take it from there. You know, once we say, hey, here's the steps to take, they either say, awesome, we've already patched it, or thank you for the heads up. You know, we'll take the recommended steps.
Nice. Nice. Don't get a lot of pushback on those, I hope.
No. Yeah.
So, I mean, I know we've kind of been touching on the topic, but let's really dive into, you know, becoming, becoming a SOC analyst, like as a career path. So how does one become a SOC analyst? Like what is the typical career path? And then I also want you to touch on the way that you ended up in this role, because right. like, we had a funny conversation about that and it was very, very different from yes. the typical way.
Yes.
So tell me how you typically do it and then how you did it.
So the typical way that most of my analysts have done it is they've already gone to college for it, already obtained some type of degree in cybersecurity. And then most of them actually don't really have any type of work experience. Some of them do have, you know, prior cybersecurity, but some don't. And that's where we can take them and, hey, you know, let's train you and show you kind of that starting block of where to go from here. So they'll come in tier one, go from there. They're really diving into alerts. It's on them to manage the boards at that point. Then if they have any questions about a specific alert and they really need to, I guess, start digging into some of the higher tools that are available, then they can raise it up to the tier two. And a tier two is going to help them, I guess, try to help them understand what they need to look at. And then from there, the tier three guys, that's really the proactive side. You're actively out there doing threat hunts. At that point, I expect you, you know, to know the tools, not necessarily, I want to say inside and out, but there's always going to be, you know, gaps in there.
Right. You're very comfortable with them.
Yes. But to be comfortable enough to where my ones and twos can then come to you before having to reach to me as the manager. But, you know, work the process as an analyst, then from there. So that's kind of where it splits. So, you know, I've seen you go one, two, three through the tiers, and then that's kind of where it branches off. You know, I got the opportunity to come into the management role. I've got guys that are working and looking at going to security engineer next. We've got an analyst. He wants to get into CEH and go Red Hat. I got another one. She wants to go into compliance so she can run vulnerability management. Then another one wants to get into cloud security. So it basically, it's what you want to specialize in. So, you know, if you want to come in and say you're starting out like cybersecurity as a whole, even, you know, no background on it, come in as an analyst, fill it out, kind of understand the nitty gritty of what it is. Advance through there. At that point, find what it is you're passionate about, what it is you really want to dive into. And, you know, I even tell my guys, it doesn't have to be security focused. You know, IT is such a huge realm. So maybe, you know, you did your time as an analyst, and you kind of got into, say, a networking path just from digging around with stuff, maybe, you know, something sparked your interest, then hey, go for it. I want to help you get there. Now, my experience was quite a bit different.
You broke the mold.
Right? So I actually had zero cybersecurity experience, still don't have a degree. I kind of started out solely networking. Out of high school, gave it the good old college try. We saw how that went, so I joined the Army and spent 13 years in the Army doing, starting out with radio and satellite communications. Then it led to networking, network management, network engineering, sysadmin. Then stepping away from the military, you know, looking for my first role, I had the opportunity here to come in as a NOC engineer and started out basically doing a lot of like help desk stuff. Mm-hmm. I had gotten my Security Plus certificate. And that was really enough to get my foot in the door onto the security side. Just having something saying, okay, this guy has a decent understanding and at least the passion in the field.
Right.
Was enough to get my foot in the door. From there, you know, I just kind of did my thing. I ran with it. And did tier one, tier two, and then from there got bumped up to the management role. So my experience has been quite a bit different. Like I said, I didn't have that background. I had worked with firewalls as far as on the networking side, configuring them and management, but I had never really gotten into having to, set up access controls or really get into the outside of just the basic setup configs, like anything outside of that, you know, wasn't really us. So a lot of that's been new. But it's been a learning experience. And that's just the biggest thing is being open to it. You know, I never would have thought this is where I'd end up. I never thought this is what I'd be doing. I mean, altogether, when I was going to school, I wanted to go be a radio DJ. My passion was music and music production. You know, I just so happened to get into kind of the communication field and ran with it from there. That was, you know, IT is just ever evolving. It's not going anywhere. We're relying on it even more than, you know, anything else damn near at this point. And that's where a lot of the money is. So that's where I tried to push, you know, a lot of new guys that are looking at what can we do? Where can we go? Like even my neighbor, he works, for Facebook, and him and I got to talk, and I told him I was an analyst at the time. And he told me that he just had the passion. He wanted to start getting into it. So I had told him, here you go. Here's all the training material I had from when I took my Security Plus. Mm-hmm. You know, get the cert and I'll give you the same opportunity I was given. When it comes to me looking at people, I'm not looking for someone that has, say, a master's or a doctorate in cybersecurity right. and has like this crazy experience. I mean, if you do, awesome. If not,
send your resume.
Yeah. Yes. If not, hey, just show me that you have the passion for it and that you're coachable. As long as I can mentor you and you're coachable, I can get you to where you need to be. I did it myself. I can walk you through the exact same steps that I did, but it's being willing to learn, being willing to step up to the challenge. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I mean, honestly, you get one alert that's just off the wall. It may be brand new. You can't understand it. It's kind of self-defeating. It really made me question myself. Like, is this what I want to do? You know, but
question, it makes you question your life choices.
It does, but it took me having to like really sit there and, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Like, it's something new. It's something challenging. And what if it is that next big attack? What if I can be the one to find it? What if I can be the one to analyze this and to like get it out there. Hey guys, this is what's going on.
You can be the guy to register the domain address for the WannaCry.
Right.
Oh man. Is he still dealing with that crap? I don't even recall whatever. I know he was, they were looking into him for a while. I don't know whatever ended up happening.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I haven't kept up with that one.
That was crazy. But, so what you're saying is, well, actually there was another question I wanted to ask you. It sounded like at some point there was kind of a change or a realization that this was something that you were very passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what that was? Was it a specific thing or was it just the environment you felt more comfortable in, or what was it that kind of made you switch gears there?
Man, I guess it more so was the environment I knew at the time when I really kind of think about it. So, I mean, honestly, I had the opportunity to switch, you know, to go back to networking, and I had to take some time to really look inward and be like, man, you know, that is where the majority of my knowledge is based out of. But is that what I want to go back to? You know, I've done security work now for a couple of years and it is challenging. It does drive me crazy at times, but man, it is rewarding, you know, when you are able to actually find something and when you are able to help the client, you know, even if client sees something, hey, we are questioning this, do you just mind running a malware scan? Okay, cool. We got you, type of thing. Just more so being able to help them and know that what we're doing is good in the sense of, I feel like on networking, you know, going in, like changing a password, going in, just giving you access to something or making right. sure you can get to an IP, as to where here it's, I'm making sure that, you know, someone doesn't get in and steal all your sensitive data. And now they got a ransomware on you for however much, you know, they're coming at you for. So I guess it's kind of that sense of feeling, you know, I guess a defender again. I spent my time kind of defending the country. Now I'm defending our clients' networks.
not all heroes wear capes.
Right.
as I hope I said to you earlier, thank you for your service.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate it.
I do appreciate it and have a love for our veterans out there. So you mentioned you were kind of talking about a few incidents or little things that popped up. Can you share a story with us of some significant yes. threat or something that really sticks out that was identified and maybe mitigated by your team there?
Yeah. So I got this one and then I got a funny one for you as well. So the first one, you know, we had a client and this is the one I talked to you about the other day. We had a client that was deploying a new soft phone system.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got an alert for it, that this new software is being installed, it was pinging as being malicious, like no questions asked. Something's going on here. Right. And so I notified the client saying, hey, this is what we're seeing. This is based off of threat intel, like reporting this is malicious. It's not just suspicious. It's malicious.
Right.
And they came back telling us, you know, hey, it's good. And since I'm not their internal SOC, I'm not the one to make the final judgment. I'm usually reporting to a CIO, VP of security, director of infrastructure, system director, like, you know, all these other positions. All I can do is advise and recommend on what I would do and the action I would take. And they had decided, you know, no, this is good. We're getting it directly from the vendor. You know, we trust it. Well, a couple of days had gone by. We get an email from the client saying, hey, thanks for the heads up. The other day, the vendor confirmed this is malicious. It turns out there was a supply chain attack. So where the software out of the box already has a vulnerability that someone's exploited and is ready to kind of, you know, take advantage of. So That one was really cool too. That was kind of my first one of like, you know, this is some real world stuff going on. And I was the one to be able to identify it and pinpoint it. And it does kind of give you that adrenaline of being like, you know, this is what it was all about. This is why I go through all the other stuff. So that way, when the one time comes, you know, I was able to successfully identify and protect the client and know that it wasn't just, hey, it's a false positive.
Right. Was there a tiny bit of satisfaction, and no one else on the that's none of our audience will tell, like your secret's safe with us. So was there a little bit of satisfaction to find out that you were right in the first place? And
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was one of those, listen, you should have listened to me, but
I told you so.
Right.
Whoops. But so. I think that speaks to we could really get into philosophy here, but I think that kind of speaks into the mentality sometimes that we have in terms of trust. And sometimes we just ignore, you know, the warning signs or other people's input or something like that. And, you know, just because we think we know better. And I'm not saying in this case that the client thought they knew better and was, you know, kind of being rude about it. But, you know, they had checked with the vendor. Maybe the vendor was a little too cocky and arrogant about it. Be like, yeah, it's fine. I don't know what you're talking about. It's fine. You know, that's why every time I and this hasn't happened in a long time, but in the past where I would go and download certain executables and they would come back with like a Windows Defender warning of like, hey, this publisher isn't trusted or it's not signed. It's, you know, it's kind of throwing up some flags there. You really have to kind of second guess it, be like, well, wait a minute. Like why didn't the publisher take the extra time to make sure that this file could not be replaced with something that is malicious, right? That, you know, that could have a different hash value or something like that. But yeah, I think it speaks to the higher problem I think we have in general.
Oh, yeah.
So you have was that the funny one, or did you?
No,
you,
so that was the serious one. So
okay, that's a serious one.
The funny one.
I still
one,
found that one pretty funny.
Right. Well, so
serious at the time.
without naming names, we've seen, you know, monitoring firewall traffic. We just so happened to pick up on some not safe for work traffic to certain websites on a client network, and that was just kind of funny getting to see it. That's like, whoa, like, what are you doing,
dude? I've got a funny story about that one. Like three jobs ago, I'm in IT, right? My role at that time was my title was network analyst. I was basically help desk, pretty small manufacturing facility. Well, I mean, not small, good size, probably 300-400 employees. The IT team was very small. I get a call into my boss's office, who is also the director of finance, and he sits me down. His name was Chris, and he goes, Brian, you know, had me close the door, which right off the bat, I was just like, oh crap. He's like, Brian, you know that we monitor web traffic here. And I said, yeah, of course. He goes, well, your name came up on a recent report here. I said, oh. And he goes, yeah, and it's for pornography. And I said, then he goes, yeah, but what's odd about it is that you visited it 5,742 times in the last 24 hours. I'm like, can I see the report real quick? Right. Can I see what URLs I was apparently going to? And basically, I had uTorrent installed because I was downloading a Linux distro over legit torrent, you know. Mm-hmm. I was using it legitimately,
right.
But because it was sitting there and pinging the tracker was classified as possibly pornography because, of course, you can also get porn there. So when I saw that, I said, oh, I get what's happening here. Yeah, I know what that is. And I explained it to him and I said, because he's like, I thought it was odd because you're pretty busy and I can't imagine you'd have the time to, you know, like, first of all, you know, we're monitoring stuff. you're busy as hell, and you certainly didn't go there, you know, 5,700 times in the last day and a half. So,
hey, don't judge me.
Just go ahead and get rid of that that software. That'd be great. So, but I was sweating a little bit there. I was like, what is going on?
Oh yeah, and that's like, so with this one, it turns out that it was actually the CIO testing the URL filtering, but it was just funny that it's like, oh, really? That's where, like, you couldn't have found another one to use.
ExampleAdultSite.com is a great way to test for if your web filter is working without actually finding out that it's not.
Right. Yes. It was just
opening yourself up for liability.
It's just funny. Around like lunchtime, you start seeing logs for Pornhub, and it's like, ooh, what's going on?
Don't bother the boss. Lunchtime. Oh, good Lord. Oh, my goodness.
He's testing URL filters. Don't worry.
That's all you got to say. That's your out right there. Like, I was just testing the filter. No, when I was a network admin in K-12, and I don't know if I've shared this story with the audience before, but I had to block Google Translate because at the time, I think the web filter product we were using was a company called iBoss. They do a lot with schools in K-12. And it was a physical appliance that kind of sat there and the traffic went through it. Turns out you can use Google Translate as a proxy because it has this really cool feature where you can have it translate a web page right in front of you. So all you have to do was tell it to translate it from English to Spanish, put in, you know, Pornhub or whatever, and the site would load. Now, this was also in the time when this was probably, God, 8-9 years ago. So Flash was still a thing, and it wouldn't load the Flash applets, but a lot of players were going HTML5, which it would load. Right. So who cares if you couldn't read the title or maybe your Spanish was a little bad? At the end of the day, the pictures worked. So
right.
you knew what you were clicking. But yeah, we had to test that, and I was like, oh, crap, this works. Like, okay. I think we the funny thing was the way that we found out about it, one of the kids in the middle school had posted to Google Classroom to his friends that you could get around the firewall or the web filter to play Agario, which was like one of those, like, you know, snake or there's snake IO and Agario is with the boxes, the bubbles, whatever. And we kept blocking them and new ones would pop up. And he decided to post it in Google Classroom, which, of course, like, hello, right. We see all that. So I got notified of that, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I said, I wonder if that works for – oh, shit, it does.
That's funny. And, you know, I've actually heard that before from friends saying where their kids had whatever, like, tablet that they supposedly had it locked down, but they were saying that the kids had found ways through – I want to say it was, like, Google or, like, even the Amazon store. But there's, like, ways that they found – to basically backdoor like into the internet when it was supposed to have been blocked off due to like whatever parental control.
They'll find a way. It amazes me. It amazes me. I mean, my son has definitely experienced, you know, there's nothing he can get away with on this network. And he knows that he's the few times that he has, you know, kind of dipped his toe into things he's not supposed to. You know, the hammer came down hard, and he knows, and it doesn't bother him. You know, he's in sixth grade now. He's in middle school. He's got a phone. It's locked down. I know everything that goes on that phone, and he doesn't mind. You know, he'll be like, hey, can I install this app? And he'll be like, no, I don't really want that on there.
Yeah.
He'll ask why. I explain it. It's good. Like, he doesn't mind those guardrails being in place. So, yeah, it's a nice to have, but on the flip side, I do have other people that I know of, like the kids that they just find a way to get around everything, and it blows my mind how they're able to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. So another question for you. How do SOC analysts work with other teams within an organization to, you know, to handle a cybersecurity incident? I know we kind of talked got a few examples of just like talking with that client, but are there any kind of, you know, what kind of relationships are built? Is this something that, you know, in maybe an ideal scenario and maybe what really ends up happening.
So I guess really our biggest thing, the biggest relationship I've realized is really coming down on their security engineers, maintaining that. And it's not only, you know, that they make a lot of the playbook changes or that they can go into the back end of LR and tune certain things for us, but seeing the amount of work that goes in just to make what to us seems like a simple change for an alert. Once I really get to see the amount of work that goes into that, I've now told the engineers and my team that the goal is for us to step up and assist them now. You know, for so long, they've solely assisted us and we really haven't done so much to help them out. So now it's kind of wanting to even the workload type of thing, because I know that they have so much more that they're dealing with. And they already have, you know, the little things we need. So anything we can do to learn whatever tools they use or what we can do, not only to advance ourselves, to hopefully learn and, you know, possibly advance to become an engineer one day, but just to be able to help them out to the point where instead of being a SOC and an engineering team, we're one cohesive team, even though we may be, you know, organizationally separated. But they're really the biggest thing is just knowing, you know, with them, even on the networking guys, you know, if we have guys that reach out to us needing assistance for internal stuff, you know, we got to be able to help them on, because we're not only watching over the client's network, we're also looking over our own. And we have to understand, too, that the ramifications on our network affect more than just us, because it'll trickle down and affect the clients as well. So, you know, honestly, something like the event we did in Florida, the Align event, just getting to kind of get face to face and to meet, even, you know, I got to finally officially meet you. I got to meet some of the pre-sales, the engineers, or the pre-sales engineers and the guys that I got to understand too, like what y'all do on the front end. It's not just like, oh, hey, let's do this presentation to a client and pitch them whatever. And then boom, it like goes from a sales rep to an account manager to us. I didn't realize like there's a whole like team out there that's basically building out what they would need, pricing it, everything, and, you know, going from there. And that's one thing in Florida, getting a talk with a lot of the guys. I want to not only, you know, do the podcast, but I've also want to set up like just one-on-ones with these guys to help them understand too what we as a SOC do and provide. That way, as they're doing the build out, they have a better understanding of what is going to happen once kind of the build out's done. Hopefully, you know, with that, it'll be able to help them maybe suggest other tools or better tools, better services, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And then also in return, I can learn from y'all what all it takes and understand more of, okay, in order for us to get this client, like this is the work that goes into it, and kind of having that broader picture of the client's network and environment as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, there's a lot of PowerPoint involved in what I do.
Yeah.
A lot of customer lunches, a lot of, phone calls and emails. Yep. But at the same time, you know, for people in my role, engineers and account managers too, because one thing that I've learned as a pre-sales engineer is while when I am invited to the conversation, the floor is mine. If it's a, you know, a decent account manager, they realize like if you're bringing in an engineer, you let them talk.
Oh yeah.
But I'm not always in every conversation. I'm not always on every phone call. And that's fine. Right. In order to even be able to scale, I can't be. But being able to give the account managers enough of what they need at a level that they understand that they can communicate effectively is super, super vital. And I think, you know, you being able to give it, you know, what the SOC has to offer to the engineers to help with build outs and what features they should be able to, you know, include or whatever. Right. And then being able to even reduce that even more to kind of that 10-minute elevator pitch that the account manager needs to know and understand and really be able to effectively communicate. That's where kind of it all comes down, right? Because you're not going to be on those calls, maybe if at all, until the very end.
Yeah.
So we need to be able to understand it. But no, this has been a lot of fun, and I hope that beyond just the people in our roles and in the sales roles, understanding more a little bit about the SOC and what's involved, but also for, you know, anyone out there that's listening that's maybe considering getting into security or getting into the SOC, it sounds like if you are able to communicate effectively and willingness to learn and have the desire to get into this field, that it would be a good fit. I want to touch on a couple more things here. Really, in the last, I would say, year and a half, the letters AI have been pretty top of mind, and I know that there's been a ton of episodes covering. I think AI has pretty much been mentioned in just about every episode now, pretty much since last January.
Mm-hmm.
But we've talked about how, like, predictive text AI, such as ChatGPT and others, can go ahead and write emails that are much more natural language that, you know, can get by not just the spam filters and email threat defense kind of things out there that are looking for those kind of breaks in language, but also kind of trick the person that's actually reading that last line of defense. So all the things just on, you know, that end that are making the attacks more sophisticated. What other on the other side here, on the blue team side, what use cases and possibilities do you see AI taking a part of in the advancement of that SOC analyst role?
All right. So the big thing, actually, our goal by the end of this year, getting into next year, we'd like to implement AI into basically have an fully automated SOC as far as just the alerting goes. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes into special reports, threat hunting, threat management, kind of those specialty, I guess, studies I had mentioned earlier, you know, those of course are going to be full hands-on manual work you got to do.
Right.
But when it comes to the alerts themselves, you know, we're looking at everything's already getting ingested manually or automatically once we get our collectors and everything out there. But if we can get to a point to where now, like, we're already automating emails as far as writing the template, but like you said, if now we can get where we trust it enough is kind of the big thing. Is trusting AI enough to know that it'll spit out the right information every time.
Right.
But I mean, if we could get into where, like, the alerting, the initial alert is automated, we already do that with some of them. But then we get into the response now. So when a client responds, instead of having myself or one of my analysts hop on there to kind of look into it more, that's where we can really get AI involved and kind of treat it like, you know, you go to like a random website and you get the little chat box that pops up. Is we kind of get it to that point where we have a chat bot that pops up on the client host. And the client can therefore communicate with the automated system, and the system can kind of judge, like, say it can simply ask, or it sent out the initial email. The client comes back saying, hey, this isn't legitimate. You know, we need to take further action. Then it can go into, okay, well, do you want us to automatically isolate the endpoint? Do you want us to quarantine the file? Do you want us to terminate a session? Kind of give it those options, but have it to where you can program the AI to kind of list out those. And then depending on what the client comes back with, boom, now the system automatically does it. So it's almost getting into, like, even the remediation at that point is automated. And the only time that we would really need hands-on either, I guess we could put some type of identifier in there for the either the client, if we really wanted to, or maybe if we say like some type of identifier for like emergency. And at that point, it gets it away from the system and boom, hey, like if this is a true emergency, we need eyes on and we need to actually ensure that everything is accurate. And it's not, you know, we're not kind of just leaving it up to AI to do its thing.
Right.
But with that too, I think once you get to implementing AI into that type of that level of automations, it's really going to come down to threat intel and right. having the most accurate, up-to-date threat intel you can find. Because as long as you can rely on your intel source, then you can kind of trust the AI to run with it. But yeah, I mean, I can't hit that enough. Just you got to make sure your threat intel is top-notch in order, in my mind, to be able to fully trust an AI system to just kind of do its thing.
Yeah. I like the chat bot idea. And it was funny. I was talking with a friend about this the other day. I think they should bring back Clippy.
Yes. Remember Clippy? Yes.
I think that would be perfect. And bring back Bonza Buddy's voice, right? So Clippy will have Bonza Buddy's voice and just link that with AI. And it'll be like, hello, it looks like you're writing malware today.
Do you right? need help with that? You yeah. know, way to go.
It looks like you're doing something you're not supposed to be. I think that's what they need to do. They need to bring back Clippy in a big way. I'm going to get a lot of hate for that
right.
one. That's fine. You know what? Leave your comment below on if we should bring back Clippy. I think we should.
I'm all for it. Let's go.
I'm going to get some shirts made. Right. Bring back Clippy. Oh, my God. That's awesome. I think there's a lot of future there. I'm curious. I want to kind of... So for my next question here, what future threats should SOX be preparing for? And I want to kind of ask if quantum computing is on that list.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, I didn't think about that. But yes.
If you haven't listened to the quantum computing yes. episode, I think it was like 62, 63. Igor was my guest and just mind blown on what a qubit is and how it works and
right.
just like, oh my God, this is really cool stuff, but a little scary.
Okay. And that's the thing, like it's getting to a point. So my biggest thing that I put, you know, for, I guess, battling the ever evolving AI, because that's what mm-hmm. it's going to get to, you know, just as we, as the defenders are trying to automate the defense, a wise attacker would hopefully, well, I want to say hopefully, but would get their stuff to where it's automated, to where, like, if I'm the attacker, I'm not physically having to do anything. I can just have it all automated. I can sit back and boom, as, like, say a Trojan is embedded and starts kind of doing its thing, as it runs into an obstacle, you can have that AI to automatically, hey, make the required adjustments to do what you need to do. Rather than say it raising a flag and then the user physically having, okay, now what do I need to do, you know, to bypass whatever. But you take that and then on top of the quantum computing, I mean, you're talking about that thing being able to make that decision in less than a second, like
right.
damn near as soon as it identifies any type of barrier, it's automatically thought of, hey, well, this is how I'm going to bypass it.
Right.
Yeah.
At that point, it's just computers fighting computers, and we're just bystanders. So many thoughts of, you know, the Terminator movies.
Yep. I'm pretty sure that was Terminator 2.
Yeah.
<right. laughs> The two of them going at it.
Like, I mean, yeah, we're screwed.
Right.
Oh goodness. It'll be fine. It'll be all fine.
Right.
I heard a saying once that they're not sure what the Third World War will be fought with, but the fourth one will be fought with sticks.
Yeah,
because there won't be anything left.
Pretty much.
Oh my goodness. All right. So Before we close out, I do have a question to ask. Since we kind of talked about kind of the SOC as a career path, and if, I'm hoping that we've got some listeners that are kind of looking into getting into that field. If you can give one piece of advice to someone considering a career as a SOC analyst, what would that be? Besides, don't do it and run.
So a funny thing, that was what I told you. I had some answers ready to go. My answer was going to be run.
Run.
Just run.
Goodness.
Total joke.
It
just because it is mentally taxing. It's not a physical job at all. It is, I work from home, and it's one of the most laid back, like, chill jobs I've had, especially compared to the military. But it's just a mental thing, because you really are having to take a puzzle that you don't know what it is. You don't even know what any of the data originally means. And you're having to take the data, identify what the data is, what it means individually. And then, okay, now let me put all of this together. And what's kind of the big picture of what's going on here? But man, so my biggest piece of advice, really, it's kind of two-sided there. So be willing to learn. You never know enough. You never know at all when it comes to this. It's nonstop. And don't be afraid to ask questions. That, I mean, that's going to be your biggest killer. If I get a tier one coming in and they cannot, if they're just not asking questions, that's a red flag for me. I know that you don't know what you're doing and that you're just trying to, like, fly under the radar. Because I still have questions on the daily, whether I'm asking my internal team or if I'm having to reach out to the engineers or to someone else. Like, if you're not willing to ask questions and just admit that you don't know at all, I don't know if you can necessarily hack it in the SOC. But just be willing to learn, and yeah, it can be challenging. There's just so many tools, so many applications, so much, everything's so different out there. I mean, yeah. You know, we're not just dealing with, like, even one code. Everything has its own type of code. Knowing, having a basic understanding of how different things communicate together. But yeah, just, man, be open to anything that kind of comes your way, and yeah, ask for help when needed, because you're gonna need it.
Be willing to embrace the suck and
yes,
ask for help.
Yes,
if you don't have imposter syndrome, check yourself.
All right. Yep.
When you said it was mentally taxing, I just had this image of 1,000-piece puzzle where all the pieces are white.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's kind of where it is sometimes. Like, when we get a brand new alert that I've never seen before, like, it's the first time, you know, say Palo or whoever has released it, it's like, okay, well, what does this mean? Like, do we even have all the data in here that we need? Because we've seen alerts where it'll be that a new alert had come in, but now we have to really look at, okay, this isn't even pulling in all the correct logs that we need to get a full picture. We have a partial picture, but say we're missing applications log, system log, whatever, that would kind of be that missing piece to help us really identify what's going on. Like I said, everything's different. I can take two of the exact alert types, and they're going to be completely different for the use case. No two alerts are exactly the same, unless it's literally the same user, same host, doing the exact same activity as they just did, you know, did prior. It's a lot of learning, because you're really trying to learn the user behavior, the network behavior of the client. And then also not just them, but also their vendors, because say they have a vendor they work with, for whatever reason, they may be in an IP range that, say, to us and our intel sources says it's malicious, but they have it blocked off to where, you know, it's known good for them. we kind of have to make that snap judgment to the client, because if we do block it, we may be messing up whatever application that the vendor needs it for. So like I said, it's just everything's different. Every use case is different. Man, you just got to be open to it.
Yeah. Nice. Jordan, this has been awesome, man. Thank you for the time today. I want to open it up to any final thoughts you may have to share before we close out.
No, just I welcome anyone that's willing to do it. Like I said, I'm not big on you have to have this huge background or whatever to get into something new. Just have that passion, have that willingness to learn, and be willing to speak up when you need to. And I think at that point, as long as you're open to it, as long as you have a good mentor, a good manager, a leader, whatever, they can get you there. You know, and it is rewarding. Like I said, it has its challenges. I've kind of joked about how I guess the toll it takes mentally. But it's worth it in the end. Just knowing, you know, like I said, you're doing something good, helping the clients out and protecting them from the evil doers out there that are trying to take them down.
And sometimes themselves, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yes, for sure. Well, again, Jordan, thank you so much for your time today. Ooh, excuse me. Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate your insight. And yeah, this has been awesome. I will encourage anyone that is listening that would like to learn more, look up some of these tools. I'm definitely going to be putting links for the Hacker News on the show notes here to check out. But that's really how you kind of stay involved and kind of get up to speed with what's going on. It's a learning process, and if you're not willing to learn, then it's probably not the right thing for you. But if it's something that you find interesting and want to learn more about, you can be like Jordan and start off with aspirations to be a radio DJ, and now he's doing this.
So far from what I wanted.
it's close. I got the cool professional microphone, but you know, if you want to do weather and traffic on the 8s, we can definitely.
I got you.
All right. Well, with that, we'll wrap this one up. Stay tuned. We're going to do a monthly releases now, first Monday of every month. So we'll have a new episode for you next month. Be sure to check out the Discord channel, check out the YouTube channel, like, subscribe, comment, all those things. This store is still up right now. We're going to be moving it over to a new platform soon, but be sure to check it out. I believe it's merch.confti.show. And thank you for joining, and we'll catch you next time. Until then, stay safe out there, and don't forget to save that config.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of ConfT with your SE. For more information and resources on today's topic and others, check out the show notes on our website at confti.show. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future topics, drop us a line at hello@confti.show. And remember, if you found this episode informative and entertaining, please help us spread the word by rating and reviewing the show on your favorite podcast platform and sharing it with your colleagues and friends. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Until next time, this has been ConfT with your SE.